WLAK 1260 AM Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. A part of Interstate 95 that collapsed in Philadelphia last weekend, now expected to reopen to the public this weekend. That's according to Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, who says repairs have been underway nonstop.
Just yesterday, they worked through the scorching heat. They have worked literally around the clock, 24/7, in 12-hour shifts.
Exact date will depend on the weather and asphalt. A Panama girl born with a heart problem has died in Border Patrol custody. Republican House Oversight Chair James Comer vows investigations into Hunter Biden will continue now that the president's son has agreed to a Justice Department plea deal.
We've still got people coming in that we hope to depose in the next weeks and months.
Hunter Biden has agreed to plead guilty to two misdemeanor tax counts for probation. The Navy is sending experts and equipment to the site where searchers are looking for a sub that went missing with five people on board. This is ABC News. The Texas power grid operator asking residents to voluntarily cut back on electricity as temperatures in that state plateau into triple digits. Federal health officials want more attention paid to possible cases of anxiety and depression.
Last year, the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force recommended that kids ages 8 through 17 should be screened regularly for anxiety. This year, the same task force says recommendations should be expanded to include all Americans between the ages of 8 and 65. The new guidance comes amid a growing recognition of anxiety disorders, depression, and suicidal thoughts and behaviors that are affecting the lives of more people. Prior to the pandemic, it's thought that one in five adults were living with anxiety disorder, that number rising in the last few years. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Ancient Roman temple complex unearthed nearly 100 years ago has opened to the public. The sacred area includes ruins of the building where Julius Caesar was assassinated in 44 BC, Andy Field, ABC News.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
Here's what you need to know in western Wisconsin. Good afternoon, I'm Jimmy Kuska. Wildfire danger remains high for northwestern and southwestern Wisconsin today. The DNR says that this year's fire season is outpacing last year so far, thanks in part to ongoing drought. The National Weather Service says conditions will stay hot and dry for at least a few more days. In Lake Halley, the village board is considering proposals that would target its homeless population. Police Chief Ed Orgon said the new ordinances would make loitering and living in vehicles ticketable offenses. He says complaints from businesses and homeowners along Commercial Boulevard are what spurred the proposals. The board plans to take up action on the proposals in July. A man accused of shooting multiple people in downtown La Crosse early Saturday morning is being held at the La Crosse County Jail on a $1 million cash bail. That's according to online court records. 31-year-old DeAndre Grant is charged with six counts of reckless attempted homicide with the use of a dangerous weapon. La Crosse police say he fired a gun from a vehicle on 3rd Street around 2 a.m. on Saturday, shooting and injuring six people. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
The law firm of Gingras Thompson & Wachs has a track record of making life-changing positive differences for their clients. $5.25 million to a woman who suffered brain injuries and her husband passed away when struck by a drunk driver. $1 million to three different individuals injured by drunk drivers. $1 million settlement to a man injured in a motorcycle accident. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs, 855-954-1186. When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs today, 855-954-1186. All in to win, Gingras Thompson & Wachs,
GTWLawyers.com. Look up cheese curds, you'll find this basic definition. Wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, so did you guess it takes 10 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of curds? Now we want to know your favorite, and where do you get your squeaky or deep fried curds? Go to our Civic Media Facebook page to share your answers. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Tank-approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. What a fun day I had today. Got up bright and early. Email from a crazy, I'm not going to call him a listener, but I got a crazy email. And I got to start with this, because this is one of these moments where you just go, folks, the victimhood, the level of victimhood in this country, the level of entitlement, the level of I'm special, and the level of lack of responsibility, the lack of, it's just, I got this email that, and it's, evidently this guy back in 2007, let me read the email. In 2007, he gives his name, and I'm not getting into this ball. I'm not going to get into his name, was arrested and imprisoned in North Carolina, USA, because of my belief in God. Got my attention. Oh my goodness. North Carolina, they're locking up Christians. Oh my goodness. Now, I assumed Christians because it was a, you know, an American sounding name, an entitled name, one of those with three names. He says, I was charged with two counts of felony child abuse for circumcising my two sons. Now, I stopped right there because I'm going, one of two ways this goes. none of them good. And I'm going, you know, explain? So he goes on, he says he was charged with other things to make him look violent. And so I stopped right there and I'm going, wait a second, I gotta look this up. So I spent a little time reading all of the stories that I could find from back in 2008 of this guy being arrested for circumcising his two children with a box cutter. Yeah, I didn't stutter. Circumcised his two eight-day-old sons, or an eight-day-old son and one a couple of months older, I guess, with a freaking box cutter. And you go, so explain this whole God thing. Where's God come into this? Did God tell you to use the box cutter? Did God, you know, send Moses down, you know, thou shall box cut your son's willy? I mean, is this it? So then he goes on to this whole level of, you know, I was abused and I was tortured and I was mistreated and they put me in jail and they did all this stuff. And I'm going, good. I'm glad they put you in jail. We need to get people who take box cutters who take box cutters to circumcise their children. Now, again, this is this level of, wow. Now, I don't know why he would come to me. Why you think this program would be a place that you would find a sympathetic ear to circumcising your child with a box cutter, well beyond me. I would assume this would be something for Ben Shapiro, for Sean Hannity, Alex Jones, maybe. That kind of stuff. But I, me? okay. But it got me to thinking today. I mean, it was, one, who circumcises their child with a box cutter? Who thinks that that's okay? And look, as I read through the story, here's a guy 32 years old, got 14 kids. Yeah, 14 kids. 11 of them by two women that he was, just a whole, and you know, it's all based on, you know, I'm special and my religious beliefs and all of this stuff. And this is, as I was reading more, I'm going, this guy probably didn't belong in jail, belongs in a mental health facility. We give so much deference and so much leeway to people who claim they believe in God and they're special because God told them to do things. And I'm going, why doesn't God ever tell them to do good things? Why didn't God tell this guy, you know, hey, love your kids and feed them and take care of them and raise them with good self-esteem and raise them to be, you know responsible, citizens who want to do well by society. How come that never is what they scream out as what God told them to do? But this is one of these things where you go, mental health treatment, something most certainly needed. And, you know, as I was going through this and I'm thinking through this whole story, and it just gets one bit crazier after another. It's like a mass across this country of this kind of thinking, that their beliefs, that their narrow, twisted, bizarre idiocy is somehow normal and the rest of everyone else is screwed up. And this is where I'm hoping at some point we have an honest conversation about reining some of this stuff in and the victimhood. You know, I've talked about Trump for a while saying, look, he's the result of bad parenting. This is bad parenting. But we do need to reclaim our society in a certain way. And that way of ensuring that laws are followed, that people are held accountable. And I guess I'm still stuck on the fact that this guy feels like he's the victim. Never mind the two children that he mutilated. Never mind that. And he could have easily gone to a doctor and had that done. So my mind then goes, well, of course, why would he go to a doctor? He's an expert. Because we've belittled intelligence. We've belittled, you know, capability. We've belittled all of this stuff to the point where, well, you know, I watched, you know, Doogie Howser, MD on TV. I'm as good as any doctor with a scalpel and a box cutter. And, you know, look, that wasn't, you know, while that was the craziest email, I got a bunch of people saying, well, you know, you were unfair to Joe Rogan and unfair to RFK Jr. No. This is where intelligence matters. This is where right and wrong matters. There is no gray area. I'm sorry. There is no gray area with taking a box cutter to your son's junk. There's just not. You just don't do it. There's no place. There's no platforming that. I am not bringing this guy on. I would never bring this guy on. But he wanted space. He wanted to be able to make his case on why he should be able to circumcise his child at home with a box cutter. Yeah. And I look at it as the same as, you know, this thing with Professor Hotez and RFK Jr. You've got this professor who has all of this knowledge, all of this study, all of this understanding, all of this. And then you got the guy going, no. Just just insane. Now, I got one of the emails, you know, parroted something I've seen before. And it said, you know, Rick, just because Dr. Peter Hotez has all these letters behind his name doesn't mean he's right. Yeah, it kind of does. It kind of means that he's the guy who knows. And this belittling of intelligence has gotten us into this position to where we don't listen to smart people anymore. Now, look, have they betrayed our trust in some places? Yeah, the moneyed interests have figured out how to prostitute that. And that's on them. But still, intelligence does matter. And that's the weird thing. Because, look, if you know, people with credentials said Box Cutter Boy is a criminal. And I agree with them. Should we platform Box Cutter Boy to be able to make his case? You know, I think box cutting is it's good American values. It's crazy. It's crazy that we would do this. Now, here's the weird thing. I look at the world we're in, and I'm going back to terrible parenting. This guy not going to be father of the year at any point. And Trump being the ultimate in you know, Exhibit A for bad parenting of never telling your children no. He's now for the first time finally being held accountable for something. Something. Someone's finally saying, you've gone too far. You've done too much. You've broken too many laws. You've taken too many liberties. And he doesn't know how to act. The guy literally cannot shut his mouth. And yesterday, as we talked about on the program, he admitted he did exactly what he is charged with. Now, there is no defense now. You did it. You did exactly what you're charged with doing. You took the documents. Now, your defense is total BS. Very childish and very spoiled rotten, but it's BS. The defense of, well, you know, it was in boxes, and my stuff was in those boxes, and my stuff, you know, I had to go through my stuff to get my stuff, because my stuff's more important because it's mine. You get this 2-year-old kind of vibe there where this guy was stunted at 2 years old. Mine. Now he's guilty. He admitted it. And this is one of those moments where you go, how did it take this long to hold somebody like this accountable? Look, even our FBI, there's just a couple of stories came out at the time, the Washington Times and the Washington Post and the New York Times. Both said the FBI did everything. The Department of Justice did everything they could possibly do. Backflips, somersaults, cartwheels. They did everything, kid. Gloves. They did everything they could do to get their stuff back, to keep Trump from this point. They did everything to save Trump from himself. And they couldn't do it. And this, again, this is one of these moments where the entitled get whatever they want, however they want, whenever they want, and no one ever holds them accountable. And, you know, it was one of these things that, you know, I was talking to my producer today, and we were talking about, you know, this kind of entitlement, this sense that, you know, I'm the king, I'm the top, I'm the most important one. And we were talking about, you know, just sports, because we're both sports guys. And I was remembering a long time ago, I was married years and years ago. My first wife was brilliant. Had a really big name job, worked for a big name company. And, you know, I'm just a truck driver. But, you know, the guys in the facility would get together and play basketball. So they invited me to play one weekend. Did I mention it was one weekend I was invited to play? I knew it was a setup going in. Because, you know, I'm the union guy and there was a union in that plant that they hated. So it was going to let's beat up on the union guy thing. So they made me guard the boss, the big boss who was a terrible basketball player. Let me just put that on the record. But fouled like crazy. And anytime you would touch him, he'd call a foul. He was just the biggest crybaby. But nobody ever stood up to him. Well, that is... until the one time when they invited the union guy to come, and you know, I got tired of him knocking me around for no reason and then, you know, calling fouls. So I, you know, went up for a rebound once and I came down, elbowed him on the top of the head and knocked him pretty much out. And it was that moment, the first time. And it, what was great is everybody, all of the players, all the people that work for him are stunned. They're standing around going, oh my God, what do we do? Had no clue what to do. No idea how now to handle this new brave world of the guy who has been a thorn in their side every day for years and years, finally flat on his back. And I said, yeah, oops, sorry, buddy. You need a hand up, you know, a little slap on the cheek. But the people around him didn't know how to respond. And this is what happens when you allow these elites. Look, they tried to get Trump out of his own way. They tried to allow him to save face. They tried, just like those guys playing on the basketball team. They tried to play within the rules of the game while still making him special. Letting him go in for layups uncontested, leaving him open to miss a shot every once in a while without boxing him out hard. You know, any of that stuff, because he was special. And I got to tell you, I don't believe in any of that. And this is why I'm frustrated in this moment, where the DOJ and the FBI, while Republicans are saying, oh, you weaponized all this, took that long to hold that guy accountable. So we got a lot of work to do on cleaning this mess up. But I got to tell you, a weird, weird day to start. But I got lots to talk about today, lots to get to. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, I come back to this, and you know, the level of crybabiness. I mean, look at the whining and the complaining that we get from Republicans on finally holding him accountable. Finally, someone saying, no, Donnie, you can't have it all. No. Quite remarkable. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, what's on your mind?
What I wanted to say is this. I am so sick and tired of this willful ignorance that goes on. Because the right wing in particular, of course, there's the left wing with the New Agers and the whatnots, but it's willful ignorance, and they're proud of their ignorance.
That's the scary part of it. It's that you know, we don't know. It was the Georgia, I mean, Bush brought this on. I remember people going, you know, he's stupid like me. And it just going, okay. I tend to want people a lot smarter than me in the White House, but if that's where your important level is, then yeah, that's where we are.
Yeah, and you know, I think a lot of it is when you have people that are capable of using reasoning and critical thinking skills, then they tend to go, wait a minute, you're kind of screwing us over here. So the religious right doesn't want that, and neither do the wealthy. They don't want it either. But, you know, it's just pathetic to see how we have dropped worldwide when it comes to intelligence. And I keep up on this all the time. And because, you know, I told you I have a degree in psychology and in sociology. And we've dropped in the United States a grand total of 20 IQ points in the last 30 years.
And what's the reason for that? Is it the RFK saying that there's radio waves? It's Wi-Fi it's got the blood-brain barrier. What's the reason for that?
Well, there are a number of things. Number one, there is a genetic component to intelligence, and it generally is passed down through the maternal line. But then you also have things that come into play, like environmental factors and pollutants. You know, things that are in the air or in the food. So there's a number of different things that play into the intelligence.
Yeah.
But then you also have these people going, well, you don't need to go to college and you don't need to go to school. All you need to do is learn how to read and write and do a little bit of arithmetic, which is basically what they did in the late Middle Ages, where as long as they knew how to sign their name and read a little bit of contracts and figure out how much money they had, they were fine.
Yeah.
But there you have it.
Appreciate the call, Alice. Thanks so much. This is the sad reality. And at some point, we've got to figure out how we turn this train around, because not good for democracy. I mean, really, when the elites have this kind of power that they can manipulate, I'm amazed every day when I have a Trump supporter reach out to me and go, I can't believe you don't support Donald. You know, he's being abused. No, he's not being abused. He broke the law. He has broken the law. He's admitted to it. Oh, just where do we go? Where do we go? Good news coming out of the Pennsylvania State House of Representatives this hour. The Pennsylvania House has passed a minimum wage increase, going to boost the minimum wage here in Pennsylvania up to $15 an hour by 2026. They say that the first boost will be from $7.25, which it is currently now, up to $11 an hour in 2024, $13 an hour by 25, and $15 by 26. They are also boosting the tipped minimum wage to be 60% of the minimum, and also it will be indexed to inflation. Now, don't get all excited, because it's not going to pass. Don't get all happy and proud. Not going to pass because the Senate is still run by Republicans and they are dead set against it, it appears. This is one of these things where you just go, elections matter. Let's quick go to the phone. Who do we got on the line and what's on your mind? Hey, Mark.
It's Mark from Wisconsin.
What's on your mind, Mark?
I saw a sign up at the local Culver's here in Wisconsin that in Sauk City, the fountain where Culver's came from, $19 an hour for adult workers that they're offering now. That this is Culver's place is a place that sells burgers and
that's great.
Great milkshakes and custard milkshake. So I mean that wages have got to go up, and I mean that it's just here in Wisconsin, it's still at $7.25 an hour is the minimum wage, and that's the reticence to increase wages is just sad here, but you know, great for Pennsylvania there, but it should have happened a hell of a lot sooner.
I agree with you. Last time we raised the minimum wage in Pennsylvania was 2006. They raised it to $7.15, and it hasn't been raised in this state since. The federal went up in 2009 to 7.25. But again, we are the poorest state in all the ones that surround us. West Virginia has a higher minimum wage than Pennsylvania. And you know, the thing is what they're saying, Mark, is you know, if we raise the minimum wage, we're not going to be able to find anybody. And as you pointed out, you know, you've got Culver's, which I love Culver's, by the way. You know, they're paying, you know, above that. So why can't we boost the floor to make sure that everyone gets a bump up?
And they don't seem to understand that you raise the minimum wage, you raise what the working class are have available to spend. They spend that money. They spend it and boost the economy. So it's a huge boost to the economy if people are making more money. That's what happened during the 50s. I mean, when it kind of started after, you know, the post-war, Second World War, I mean, that when unions are out there big and strong and then tax rates were high, but the economy boomed.
Yep.
And that, and maybe we should take a lesson from the past, but I don't think we have the people, our current crop of politicians, especially on the right, have the wisdom to even see that.
No, they don't. And that's why we, the working people of this country, have got to stop dividing ourselves over these idiotic issues and get back to what's really important, that kitchen table economic stuff, how we put food on our table, keep a roof over our kids' head. To me, that's what we've got to do. Put down the red hats and the blue hats, get that hard hat back on, and rebuild this country.
Right you are, brother. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Mark. Appreciate it. Now, look, you know, they passed it in the House here in Pennsylvania, and Republicans immediately are, oh, we're going to lose jobs. It's crazy. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1941. That was the day Ford Motor Company finally signed with the United Auto Workers. Ford was the last of the big three to sign with the UAW. The hard-won victory came after nearly three decades of struggle to organize there. Anyone attempting to build a union had been met with the full force of Ford's service department, led by thug Harry Bennett. Intimidation, Jew baiting, red baiting, firings, and beatings were common in the years leading up to unionization. Some unionists had even been murdered. The company finally caved after a solid strike shut down production at the massive River Rouge complex in April. Several union committee members had been fired, and the UAW called a strike in their defense. Tens of thousands of black and white workers poured out of their departments to join the picket lines. They blocked all plant gates with their cars. Strike bulletins, press statements, and radio broadcasts kept workers updated on the latest decisions. A week into the strike, the NLRB ruled an election be held within 45 days. Strikers went back to work on guarantees that their co-workers would be reinstated. The following month, the UAW won union certification after 60,000 rallied in Detroit's Cadillac Square in support. When Ford finally signed the first contract, it guaranteed competitive wages, a closed shop, and dues checkoff. The first contract also ensured seniority rights, grievance procedures, and pensions. The union immediately took advantage of the contract clause that prohibited racial discrimination. They set up a commission to combat racism on the shop floor, issuing anti-racist literature and backing the elections of black committeemen and stewards. Labor historian Steve Babson notes, it was a watershed in American history.
Years ago, a Texas lawmaker got caught using his official position to enrich himself by taking money from special interests in exchange for voting their way. The culprit did not deem this as corrupt, but just the normal ethic of an enterprising business transaction. "I seen my chances," he explained, "and I took 'em." This is the Clarence Thomas Code of Ethics. As has been widely reported, this Supreme Court judge, who reliably rules for corporate supremacy over the people's interests, has secretly been on the take for years from a billionaire corporate right-winger. Real estate tycoon Harlan Crow, an extremist activist for plutocratic government, has been lavishing millions of dollars worth of luxury vacations, private jet travel, family housing, and educational payments, and other gratuities on Thomas. Yet, this supposedly supreme lawyer says he detected no whiff of bribery, nor did he see any need to inform us commoners of it. He simply seen his chances and took 'em. But Thomas knew damn well that it was improper, corrupting, and disgusting. After all, during the last three decades, he has consistently voted for court rulings to make such obvious graft legal. For example, he's voted again and again to drain common sense from our anti-corruption laws, declaring that it is legal for a corporation to keep a public official on private retainer, that it's okay for political officials to sell access to their offices, that the appearance of corruption is not corrupt, and directly relevant to Harlan Crow, Thomas voted that it is technically not bribery to try influencing public officials by bestowing a series of gifts to them over time. This is Jim Hightower saying, if it seems to you like the system is rigged to favor the powerful, there you have it. Clarence Thomas is both the rigger and the beneficiary of the system.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I've got an email from Jennifer who agrees 100% with my assessment that Trump's parents were terrible. That he sees permanently stunted, she writes, as a two-year-old throwing a temper tantrum in the cereal aisle. I have said that before numerous times, but we're stuck with this. And I think Bill Barr is right. We shouldn't have to deal with his therapy sessions. It's time to move it along. And I'm still hoping. I know I said no jail time. Part of me still hopes for that. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the latest defense of mine. I've asked our good friend Craig Harrington to come talk with us. Craig is the research director over at Media Matters, mediamatters.org, the website. Craig, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for the visualization of Donald Trump as one of those seagulls from Finding Nemo. It really does put it all together. That is exactly the case we're dealing with his retention and mishandling of classified documents. We could just stop right now.
Yeah. So will that defense hold up even in front of a Trump appointed judge? Well, you know, it's all mine. It was in boxes and with my name on them. So clearly mine, right? It's mine, Craig.
Yeah. I mean, that remains to be seen how well it holds up. Your reference there, of course, is to the judge in this case, is a Trump appointee, Eileen Cannon, who, when Trump appointed her, she faced some degree of pushback and blowback from the legal community, which did not think that she met the qualification standards to be, a lifetime appointed federal judge. She's handed the Trump team a couple of wins previously. But, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I've been following this case very closely, and I've seen the legal expertise that's been available in public media. And of course, talked to a handful of legal experts myself about this. And it does seem that the way this indictment was framed, particularly with damning evidence from Trump in his own words in recordings that were produced as part of the investigation, it does seem like he knew that the documents he kept were not his. But that doesn't mean that that the case might not run into some hurdles, some of them which may or may not be placed there by the judge overseeing the proceedings, which, as we just said, is a Trump appointee who has handed him wins in this case. Yeah. In recent months.
No, I mean, I'm there's so much to this that I think, you know, is important to point out. A big part of it, and I talked about this at the beginning, the fact that the FBI and the DOJ waited so long, that they did so many, you know, mental gymnastics, procedural gymnastics. They did cartwheels and somersaults and you name it. They wore kid gloves. They did all this stuff to try and get him to go, please, please comply. Please do what the right thing is. Please do what everybody else has done when this happened. Please give us our stuff back. And it took him a year to finally decide to do something about it. I mean, that is mind-blowing to me on how somebody can have that kind of ability to avoid consequence and then still come out and say, no, you're treating me unfairly.
Yeah, and it's not just Trump who's making this claim that he is being treated unfairly. You know, the right-wing media echo chamber and the media and political ecosystem that Trump now controls, but which also mutually supports him, you know, they reacted with kind of very predictable outrage when this 37-count federal criminal indictment was unsealed and displayed to the public, you know, in the past few days. This case involves the mishandling of government records that did not belong to Donald Trump. And it also involves the mishandling of classified materials, which did not belong to Trump. And specifically, what we've seen is a number of arguments that, first of all, it's a claim from his media, from sort of media sycophants, as well as from himself, that he owned these documents, that they were his because he was the president and they were produced during his administration or delivered to him while he was in office. There's very clear black letter law that these documents were not his, but that is going to be his claim. That's going to be his legal argument. And that is certainly the publicity argument that they're making. Then there's another argument that he's started to pick up that really was manufactured by right-wing media, by some of the sort of very serious conservative intellectuals in the in the right-wing media space, that this prosecution on the Espionage Act in particular is inappropriate because Donald Trump isn't a spy and hasn't committed espionage, and the indictment doesn't accuse him of actual, like, spy crimes. And so him being charged with this act is somehow inappropriate. But that's also black letter law in the Espionage Act. We've seen lots of people who have been charged using the Espionage Act for simple mishandling or misappropriation or theft of government records or classified materials, the dissemination of them, yeah. the storage of them improperly. And in fact, the day that Trump was arraigned in Florida, a U.S. airman, not Jack Teixeira, who was an Air National Guard's member of the Air National Guard out of Massachusetts, another U.S. airman was actually sentenced to prison, I believe, for 3 years, with some time served on there. But prison sentence of 3 years for the mishandling of classified materials. And then in the case of this U.S. airman, they actually were not intentionally trying to misuse them. This person was actually taking work home to try to, like, get through the backlog of documents and materials. But you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to take classified materials out of appropriate containers or appropriate facilities. It's a crime to move them inappropriately. And this person went to prison. They were remanded immediately into federal custody when they were arraigned. Donald Trump wasn't remanded into custody when he was arraigned. Donald Trump got to go to Bedminster, New Jersey, and host a fundraiser. Yeah. So the idea that he's being treated inappropriately, the idea that there's a second tier, a two-tiered system of justice that is sort of out to get Donald Trump, it's actually quite the opposite. There may be a two-tiered system of justice here.
Not maybe.
But it's benefiting Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
Other people who faced much lesser crimes. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of documents, hundreds of classified materials. If he were an airman, if he were a guardsman, he would have been in prison for the past 2 years as the investigation proceeded, not you know, living a millionaire's life down at his private estate in Florida.
Well, as the email I just got said, reality winner got 4 years for one document.
Yeah, that is a perfect example. And the odd thing here is that some of the people who were responsible in that reality winner case, in particular Glenn Greenwald, who's become one of these, like, Trump who I do not support types of people, he has been just on a warpath about how this prosecution and investigation of Trump is inappropriate. And Glenn Greenwald's publication was actually responsible for, because of its own sort of lax operational security, they actually outed Reality Winner as the source of that classified document that they published when The Intercept published that. He has been on a warpath against this prosecution that Donald Trump faces. But you know, Reality Winner went to jail for literally hundreds of times lesser of a crime. So the idea that Trump is somehow being, you know, singled out or treated unfairly, it just doesn't stand up to basic muster. Of course, that's plenty for right-wing media, but I think for most people, they don't think that this has been a prosecution that's been inappropriate. And you can actually see that in polling.
No, you do. You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Craig Harrington. Craig is the research director over at Media Matters, mediamatters.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at the work that they do. Now, Mary sent me an email here during the break, because you had said that, you know, on the Espionage Act, that they're not claiming that he's a spy. She simply asks, how do we know?
Yeah, that's an interesting argument, because, you know, people have said the indictment doesn't accuse him of committing acts of espionage, like the traditional James Bond types of spying, that the indictment doesn't accuse him of directly handing documents to foreign nationals or to hostile foreign agents or collaborating with a foreign government. But we actually don't know that. We just don't know. The trial hasn't begun. So it's entirely possible that if we went to trial, we'd learn more through the discovery phase or through the open trial process. The indictment doesn't accuse him of being a spy or of handing over government classified secrets in exchange for cash. They don't accuse him of being engaged in a bribery scheme or anything of that nature that you might traditionally consider to be espionage. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen. We just literally don't know. Yeah. And we won't know until there's a trial or there's some sort of plea agreement that comes out of this pretrial process. We literally just don't know.
Yeah, I said from the beginning, I don't think that that's part of it. I think this was purely about a child wanting a shiny thing to be able to show his friends. But again, that's my view of who he is. You know, so he likes to play the big shot. Oh, look, I got classified documents laying all over my bathroom. Look how important I am. That's always been my view of him.
And that certainly seems to be backed up by some of the conversations from Trump himself that we see in the documents. He's kind of, he's a very braggadocious person. And you can read in some of the quotations that they have of him. This is live audio that they have that was uncovered by the investigators. He's kind of just bragging. He's waving things around. He's showing them off. And this, again, just goes to the idea that he's facing some kind of political persecution for committing these sort of haphazard mistakes and these like simple miserly crimes. It's somewhat absurd to think that there's a political motivation to the DOJ going after him. Like, he was just flaunting regulations. He was just openly violating the law for whatever reasons.
If you remember at the beginning of his presidency, there were stories about classified documents being, you know, just left around in a ballroom in Mar-a-Lago with, I think it was the Japanese who were, or it was either the Japanese or Chinese dignitaries they had come in. But there was reports that they had classified material just kind of laying around where you go, why would you do that other than it's just, hey, look how important I am.
Yeah, this was actually one of the very first sort of Trump White House scandals. I'm not sure exactly of the timing, but it was Donald Trump and then Japanese Prime Minister, who's since been assassinated, right, Shinzo Abe. And they were having an open conversation. I believe this conversation was with regard to missile strikes, cruise missile strikes against Syrian air bases. And they were just having an open conversation at the dinner table in Mar-a-Lago, surrounded by hundreds of guests. There are photographs that are still on Twitter of documents and sensitive materials just strewn about, and an open conversation that Trump was having with another world leader in full view and within earshot of the public. And those sorts of stories came out of Mar-a-Lago over and over and over again. And none of those, nothing from those 4 years are included in this investigation. It's entirely based upon what he did after he stopped being president, when what he did was effectively stealing documents that did not belong to him, mishandling them and misappropriating them and misusing them, storing them in an unsecure facility, and then obstructing the investigation into recovering them and lying to investigators and refusing to give them back. He also roped multiple people into this criminal conspiracy, including multiple lawyers who signed legal documents lying to the government. And essentially, he forced them to commit crimes on his own behalf by lying to his legal team. And all of those lawyers have since resigned. You know, this isn't a political persecution. This is a person who was extremely careless and haphazard, and almost intentionally so. And the government just pleaded with him for over a year to play ball and return the documents the way everyone else had. Yeah. And what he refused, and he just simply refused to do it until their hands were tied. And this is also, you know, this is not the only litigation. This is not the only criminal or civil litigation that Trump faces. His legal exposure after leaving the presidency, it's truly remarkable, the amount of protection the presidency provided him. He has other criminal investigations in New York City, in New York State, in Fulton County, Georgia, and there's another federal investigation into his involvement in the January 6th insurrection. All of those cases are completely independent of one another, and they're all proceeding right now because for the 4 years that he was in the office of the presidency, he was shielded from investigation and from prosecution, and now he's not the president, so all of these cases were able to continue, and that doesn't even continue the civil litigation that he lost for the defamation and sexual abuse against E. Jean Carroll. And she's actually bringing that case again because the day after he lost that case, he continued to publicly defame her on what was it, the May 10th CNN town hall that he did that was hosted by Caitlin Collins. All of this legal trouble is happening all at the same time, and he entirely brought it on himself. And, you know, there's no one else to blame. Right wing media are sort of cobbling together to try to find excuses and deflect and talk about Hunter Biden and Bill Clinton's sock drawer. But just nothing stands up to muster. Like, this is just the simplest scrutiny will tell you that Trump brought all of this on himself. And the reason it's all snowballing right now before the election is because it takes a long time to build these cases. If he weren't running for president, all these cases would still exist.
Right.
And they would still be proceeding on the same timelines.
So what do you say to the person who goes, you know, this is just all a hit job. They're just going after him because they don't want him to run for president. Because there is that thought out there that all of this is just, they're just targeting poor Donald because they can't beat him again at the ballot box. You've heard that frame. you know, what's the response to that when someone who's that closed-minded? Because I listen to all this stuff and I go, why would we want someone so irresponsible in the White House? And then when does the Republican Party shed themselves of him and be done with him because of all the chaos?
Yeah, well, those are a couple of different questions. And so the first one, the argument that this all of this is happening because he's running for president again. Well, so that's a counterfactual that we can't prove, right? He is running for president again, and there's no way to get around the fact we can't run, you know, a real world experiment again. And so while the Jesse Waterses of Fox News and the even the sort of very serious types at the National Review or some other conservative publications, they might be arguing that Trump is only facing the weight of these investigations because he's going to run for president again. And if he won, he'd potentially be shielded from investigation and from prosecution again. The idea that this is all being done because he's running for president is somewhat undermined by the fact that these investigations have been going on for a very long time, and he hasn't been actively running for president that entire time. He was informally a candidate. Everyone knew he was going to run again. He kept saying that he was going to run again, but he hadn't filed any of his paperwork until the paperwork was formally filed. And these investigations almost all predate his filing of his formal paperwork. So you'd have to say that the DOJ like had a crystal ball or was making an educated guess, but that'd be a waste of their time. There's no reason for them to do that.
Going to be fun and entertaining over the next year plus to find out how this works itself out. And maybe we come to a collective moment of let's move on. Maybe, I don't know, but it is entertaining. Craig, I appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Our good friend Craig Harrington. Make sure you check out the work that he does over at Media Matters, mediamatters.org, the website. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1943. That was the day that would go down in the history books as the 1943 Detroit Race Riot. The violence started on Belle Isle, a large island park in the Detroit River. Both white and black Detroiters were visiting the park on that hot, sunny summer Sunday afternoon. The fighting broke out among a number of the white and black youth. Such interracial fighting over the use of parks and recreation space happened frequently throughout the urban North during the 1940s. Soon, false rumors spread about white and black attacks on women and children. Fueled by these rumors, anger grew among members of both communities. The fighting spread across the bridge into the city. The next day, federal troops were called in to restore the peace. Over 3 days of fighting, 34 people were killed. 25 were black, including 17 killed by police and federal troops. 9 were white. The next month, the NAACP produced a report called What Caused the Detroit Riot? An Analysis. They found that one of the biggest reasons for the sharp racial animosity was the influx of new black workers into the Detroit labor force. During World War II, Detroit's mighty car industry converted its factories to wartime production. As factory workers went off to fight, demand for labor soared. Southern labor, both black and white, were recruited to come north. Many white Detroiters did not want to work with the new African-American hires. From March to May of that year, there were 5 separate work stoppages by white laborers over black hiring or promotion. At the Packard Motor Company, nearly 27,000 workers walked off the job over the upgrade of black workers.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So again, Pennsylvania House passed the minimum wage increase, 103-100. The Pennsylvania House is broken down with 102 Democrats, 101 Republicans, that means a couple of Republicans went over and voted for it. How amazing. Only I think three voted for it, and I think one Democrat voted against it, which you go, how do you do that? But again, they're going to raise the minimum wage over the next couple of years from the current state law of 715, federal law 725, up to $15 an hour by 2026. I'm going to do that in steps. The tip minimum wage is going to go up to 60% of the minimum wage, which currently is $2.83 an hour. That's the minimum wage in this state for tipped workers. Now, what's interesting is Republicans were, well, we can't possibly vote for this. And this woman, Katie Klunk, she's a York County, Pennsylvania Republican. She says, I cannot support a bill that would put a local family restaurant out of business and along with it, the many employees who make a living at their three locations. And I'm going, hold on a second. I don't know about you, but $2.83 an hour, I don't know. I don't know what you buy with that. You can't even buy a Happy Meal with that. 7.25, the minimum after the tips. You can't make a living on that either. I'm confused at where your values are in this. Now, understand what they're saying. That there, it's more important for these handful of business owners to be able to make profit than it is for working people to put food on their kids' table. That's what they're saying. They're saying that we've chosen sides in this. Not that we want to make sure that everyone's able to survive and make ends meet. No. It's all about, we got to have these small business owners who, give me a break. $15 an hour over. Now, remember, this is with tips and all of that. If you're not making that, there's a problem. Minimum wage right now, $290 a week. Who can survive on that? You're talking $15,000 a year. Who can survive on that? Now, according to the Employment Policy Institute, because as soon as Pennsylvania passed this, immediately they sent out their numbers, said it's going to cost Pennsylvania almost 86,000 jobs by 2026. Half of them are going to be at bars and restaurants. They're going to lose that. It's going to cost almost 32,000 tipped workers their jobs. One out of four workers are going to lose their job in the restaurant industry. And you go, hold on a second. So what you're saying is there are that many people who make below the minimum wage, make below that kind of wage to be able to start, that they're going to lose those jobs because they're not making that kind of income? Is that the kind of economy we want? Is that a positive thing? I'm telling you, at some point, we've got to demand better. Let's go to the phones. You got Barry on line one. Barry, how are you?
Yeah, good. Good, Rick. Just to have a job ain't enough because slaves had jobs. So that's not just to have a job ain't enough. And the second point, Rick, was I saw a poll approval rating. I thought Trump was 33. And Joe Biden was 31. I can't explain that. The third point was union members voted for Hillary 51% and for Joe and 20, 56%. So that's disgusting to me as a union member myself.
I agree.
So that's all I got, Rick.
I appreciate it, Barry. No, that's good stuff. No, I mean, to go through it, simply, the fact that union members look to Republicans as a possible island is amazing to me. And it tells you how well unions have done for their members to make them think that they can be Republicans, to make them think that, that they have their interest at heart, when the fact of the matter is Republicans have done everything they can possibly to destroy unions and destroy the ability for working people to make a living. It's just crazy. And Barry, I appreciate the call, man. Thanks so much. But this is one of those moments where working people have got to wake up. Now you go, but Rick, Joe Biden's numbers are down, and it's solely because look at the power of the right wing media. you know, as my kid was telling me yesterday, all he sees on his social media feeds is all stuff attacking Biden, all stuff attacking Democrats. Democrats aren't even, they don't even seem to be competing in this space. Right now, we should be talking about raising the minimum wage at every moment. The fact that you've got Republicans saying, you know, sorry, 7 1/4, no, you don't deserve more than that. Every person who works for a living who makes less than $15 an hour should be marching in Pennsylvania, or a state that doesn't have a $15 an hour minimum wage should be marching to the election office to get a voter registration to vote in the next election to start throwing these bums out. But the reality is the moneyed interests know. They know if they throw out a little red meat, talk about, you know, this bit of division, this bit of outrage candy, keep funding this right-wing media, keeps shoving this stuff down our throat, we're going to eat ourselves.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC.